week. Next is paper is called Sonic Zoom, audio field recording, archiving, and remixing with mobile devices and locative media.
Thanks, Sarah. Okay, good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here bright and early, Sunday after the party. Appreciate it. All right, so here's the title. As Sarah already read, Sonic Zoom, audio field recording, archiving, and remixing with mobile devices and locative media. So Sonic Zoom is a team research creation project that investigates the use of smartphones as audio field recording devices. On a technological level, we ask, what new practices of sound recording, digital audio storage, and creative remixing are afforded by contemporary mobile devices? On a social level, we seek to explore how such technologies enable different forms of agency and community building, using cultural and artistic expression as a methodology. On a creative level, we engage new tools and techniques for mobile locative audio field recording and sound manipulation to better understand the digital economies in which these applications are embedded. We employ technological innovations developed in the Mobile Media Lab at Concordia University, which is co-directed by myself and Kim Sotra. At this point, I would also like to mention and show some of the other people involved in this work, including our own illustrious Charity Marsh. So here's a list of those who have been involved. You see Kim, Zach, Charity. Zach is a colleague at Concordia. Yvonne Casbon works at Carleton University. And then I'll just highlight Sam Tulin, Laura Newman, Andrew Simpson, Cynthia Wong, and Ben Spencer have been Concordia-based RAs that are really central to the project. Chinfeng Liu is our iOS programmer. He was also a Concordia student until very recently. Aaron Baxter, who's been doing the web programming, and Dan Hamilton has been helping with some of the virtual modeling that's involved in the project. So the shorthand title for the project, Sonic Zoom, has two meanings. The first is in the sense of zooming in or out. Our principal recording tool is our proprietary iOS app, Audio Mobile, which allows users to record sounds from their everyday lives, so walking, driving, sitting, indoors, outdoors, that kind of thing, and upload these files to a web application that plots them onto a Google map with relevant metadata. The other meaning for Zoom is in reference to mobility and movement. One of the most important innovations featured in the Automobile app is the ability to make dynamic recordings resulting in sound files with multiple GPS tags, so sonic vectors or zooms. So I will begin with a short background sketch in terms of the two research creation tool development initiatives linked to the Sonic Zoom project, which is Automobile and another one called Echoscape, and I'll then move to a brief survey of various other sound mapping projects, before engaging in a critique of the concept and practice of sound mapping and closing with some of the ethical considerations that are becoming central to our work. So again, Automobile is an iOS app that allows users to record the sounds around them, attaching a photograph and GPS coordinates to the file. These elements can then be uploaded to an online sound map and shared with others in a variety of ways. Echoscape, on the other hand, is an immersive arena for the exploration, sampling, and remixing of sounds collected with Automobile. It involves navigable 3D computer simulations of the original recording environments built using the Unity gaming engine, for those who know it, OpenStreetMaps information, and the Shuttle Radar Topography mission data. OpenStreetMaps gives us street names, built environment models, and then the Shuttle Radar Topography mission data helps us with the topographical features that are part of the simulation. Moving through these simulations causes sounds to play back, allowing users to remix them in novel ways using the provided custom audio effects and looping tools. Today I'll be speaking principally about the Automobile platform and map, but if any of you are interested to learn more about Echoscape, please talk with me afterwards and I can give you the URL for the latest test version that we have working now. I've also listed this on my last slide, which is going to be coming up later. So the Automobile app is not yet available on the App Store. This ties into the different types of labor that are involved in the design and programming of such a mobile app, which I can assure you seemed much less involved when I first started this work than now. Working as a scholarly research team means a different sort of timeline from private industry, especially when it comes to working with student RAs as programmers. And suffice it to say that our timeline has been slower than would have been ideal, in part due to the pace of academic life and the needs for students such as our main programmer, Chinfeng Liu, to deal with all the other projects and initiatives that are part of their full-time work as university students. And I want to highlight that as a student, you're engaging in work and labor. This was a big part of the student movement last year that happened in Montreal that was somewhat, anyway, problematic, right? Add to this the ridiculous and commercially driven rate at which Apple updates their mobile hardware and operating systems, and you can imagine that we have faced a few delays in terms of coding for the multi-platform functionality that we're looking for. Nevertheless, we do have an excellent version of the app that I would be happy to share with anyone present who has access to an iOS device. Again, I've included my email address on the final slide, and you can send me an email, and I'll forward you a copy of the app. The last important missing component is the communication, though, between our app and the website that we're building. This is exceedingly close to being finished, I'm told, but in the meantime, we have a workaround that has allowed me to recently start to build our audiomobile sound map, starting about 3 weeks ago in Montreal, and then on a recent trip to Buenos Aires to feature the app at an exhibition and a workshop and a symposium paper that was part of the Mobile Perspectives Initiative that was organized by Martha Ladley and Guillermina Buzio from OCAD University in Toronto. So I'll just quickly now close Keynote and show you the map. If you do want to visit the map, I would encourage you to go there in Chrome. It works best in Chrome. And you can see there's some activity here in Canada and then some activity down in Buenos Aires. If I zoom in, try to zoom into Hamilton here. I was making some recordings the other day, walking around the walking around the conference site. So with each file, we have a picture. Here we go. This is all around. Music. I was on my way to the factory for the screening of the camera. So these are recordings that I made, and I'm certainly embedded in a kind of soundscape approach, which I'll talk about in a moment, when it comes to making these kind of recordings. And one of the major things that we learned in Buenos Aires is not to assume that everybody's going to be immediately taken by that particular method and attitude towards sound. And sorry, this is a little clunky. So we were very successful in Buenos Aires. The workshop involved 6 participants down there. We recorded about 200 different sounds in the week that I was there. And I really want to highlight a couple of the sounds in particular.
The train station near my house.
This was a guy named Felipe who kind of stunned us with his use of the app because he didn't treat it as a soundscape or audio field recordings app so much as a way to annotate different pictures of places that were important to him.
Train, choo choo.
That's my favorite one by far.
Very beautiful day at the morning in the park, and the sun is very hot.
They said it was cold down there. It was about 15 degrees. Everybody was wearing their winter jackets. Interior spaces. People took their devices into their homes. So I'll leave it at that for now. But for me, being able to showcase this in a conference like this is a very exciting moment because up until now, the map has been not working so well, and we've really got something that's just quite functional. So the project sits at the intersection of soundscape studies, mobility studies, and the investigation of contemporary technologies and practices of audio production. A central aim of the Sonic Zoom project is to enrich our understanding of Canadian and international sound environments, or soundscapes, as inhabited through the everyday patterns of movement by humans. These would include soundscapes that are undergoing dramatic shifts. Recording such endangered sounds fits the environmentalist framework of the foundational soundscape studies work started by Murray Schafer and other advocates of the World Soundscape Project in the late 1960s, with their focus on capturing and saving disappearing sounds. The Sonic Zoom Project, however, rejects the accompanying rural preference or urban prejudice of the World Soundscape Project. And here I would point to work by Sophie Arquette and Andrew McCartney, who have also been quite critical of that. And it recognizes the dynamism and power of urban sounds, including sounds often characterized as noise. Such sounds contain the capacity to provoke thoughtful reflections on the bustle and diversity of the city when captured and reframed through practices of sound mapping. The field recording, manipulation, and remixing of samples of soundscapes also has the potential to move us bodily and mnemonically, so I'm thinking of Tia Denora's work here, through rhythms produced via electronic and sample-based music techniques, which is a big part of my practice as an academic. It is in this triangulation of techniques and theoretical frameworks from the fields of soundscape studies, including sound mapping, mobility studies, and contemporary accounts of electronic and sample-based musical practices that we're really girding the originality of our project. The choice of starting with mobile devices for sound recording, remixing, and mapping also opens up such practices to a broad range of participants through the non-reliance on specialized equipment and the promotion of our free and simple-to-use audiomobile app. I will come back to this later because, of course, iOS devices are not something that everybody can access around the world, and this is something that was really brought out in strong relief when we were down in Buenos Aires. Sonic Zoom is situated amidst other sound mapping projects, but with important unique features. While there are many audio recording apps available for smartphone users, those that integrate GPS tagging features are more rare. But if we do consider what's available, there's names like Audio Boo, Fire, the iRig Recorder, for example. Only the first of these integrates a mapping function, so Audio Boo, and it's not prominently featured. The Urban Remix and iSay app projects are both linked to university research projects, so Georgia Tech and University of Salford, Manchester, respectively. And both explicitly raise the notion of soundscape as a key trope. They offer limited recording and meta-tagging functions through the phone, and the Urban Remix app offers no onboard map viewing function, requiring users to log into the website and become a part of their community to access the sounds that they recorded on the phone. The Montreal Sound Map project is a very successful venture, and the Radio Apori project is also a similar and very successful sound mapping initiative on a global scale, with many audio posts from around the world. Neither, however, utilize a mobile application for recording and uploading files. None of these apps and or projects integrate dynamic GPS tagging, so the kind of zooming feature that we're talking about. So we have a little bit of unique niche there as well. I'm going to skip through the rest of that and then show you quickly some of the multitude of different sound mapping projects that are out there. So this is the Basque Sound Map project. This is Sounds Around You here, which is, they have an app associated with it, University of Salford. We have here New Orleans Sound Mapping Project. This is fantastic. It's a really interesting project. It integrates soundscape recordings and then interviews. This is the Korea Sound Map, Urban Remix project that I mentioned. This seems to have been abandoned, this project, unfortunately, too. I thought it was quite interesting. The UK Sound Map, you know, they boast over 2,000 recordings collected in a year, and they've really filtered the sounds into different kinds of categories, which is quite interesting. We have the Montreal Sound Map, which is a very important and interesting project. A related project is the Inuktitut Sound Map, also created by a Montrealer who went up north on a research trip and collected a variety of sounds and worked with the community there. We have Radio Apori, which is, this is probably one of the largest databases of sounds that's out there. They explicitly say they don't want any sounds recorded on cell phones, which I find kind of interesting, a little bit problematic. And then I'll also show the Sound Seeker. This is an early project. This is based in and around New York. And in particular, I wanted to just highlight one thing from their About page, which I'm going to come back to in terms of questions of ethics. So Sound Seeker is a map that privileges the ear over the eye. The project reaches across the city's geographic, economic, educational, cultural, and racial divides. It's this kind of hyperbolic statement, which I find somewhat problematic, and you often see it associated with sound mapping projects. We want to make sure we don't do this kind of thing. So the I also mentioned a production technique. I will mention a production technique, which is key to our project, which we're calling the in-situ composition. So the in-situ compositional method is a central part of our initiative. I don't have time to talk a lot about it, but it is an idea. The notion is taking, not using the Audiomobile app, but other commercial available apps, notably Beatmaker, Nano Studio is another one. These are inexpensive apps which are really powerful in terms of the kind of audio production you can do. And the idea is to, Sam Tulin, our main research assistant, has really spearheaded this. And the idea is to go to a place, make recordings in that place, and then sit down in the moment and create a composition based on the sounds that are around you in that particular moment, which is a type of method which is really afforded by mobile devices and much less easy to do with a laptop. Lastly, I'll just mention the Sonic Zoom project has the explicit aim to make its technologies, its sound archive, its creative and artistic interventions, and knowledge base as publicly and freely accessible as possible. So the app is going to be a free app on the App Store. We're integrating Creative Commons licensing into the sounds that are uploaded to the webpage, etc. We're also going to make the app open source. In terms of soundscape studies, while the Sonic Zoom project departs from the traditions of the World Soundscape Project, it draws inspiration from ongoing work to open up soundscape studies into further realms of phenomenologically oriented research. And I'll point to work that's happening at the Center for Research on Sonic Space and Urban Environment, the Cresson Research Center in Grenoble, France. So there's figures like Ogillard and Thibault and others. Andrew McCartney's Soundwalking Interactions project is very important. The 100 Finnish Soundscape projects led by Helmi Jarvinoma is also quite central in terms of thinking about this project. And I'll also point to the Acoustic Territories work that Brandon LaBelle has been doing as well. In terms of studies of electronic and sample-based music, while much has been written about hip-hop and mobility in terms of class and also transportation, and we think about the subway here, graffiti culture, that kind of thing, and also the historical significance of the mobile sound system and boombox, so Kool Herc and others would be certainly a part of that scene, the role of mobile devices has received little serious attention, at least up till now. While the cell phone as a form of conspicuous consumption is often referenced in terms of its symbolic value within hip-hop and other forms of contemporary electronic and sample-based music, No studies have yet been released on potential new directions for these genres in terms of integrating locative media, not to mention the use of the smartphone as a new production platform. So our work is also relevant to studies of sampling in hip-hop, pop, and electronic music, as these genres are referenced in the compositions we are producing, employing an alternative practice of sampling from field recordings as opposed to commercial and copyrighted material. The digitization of audio production technologies has brought with it a parallel reduction in the space and equipment necessary for sophisticated electronic audio recording, mixing, and dissemination. While many of these technologies are portable, laptops, mixers, and microphones, they are not mobile. They're not carried with the user at all times and are not available in all circumstances. So mobile devices such as cell phones or MP3 players, iPads, that kind of thing, do, we think, represent new opportunities in terms of field recording and audio production as they are ready to hand while on the move. This is one of Sam's little phrases, which I love. Mobility studies asks how we move through spaces, introducing a temporal dimension into the preoccupation with space and a call for more robust data sets for the development of simulations and analyses of movement. So I point to the work of Kim Sochik again here, Barbara Crow. Zach Patterson has also done some work in this domain. Mobile media devices are also a prevalent theme for mobility studies in terms of how they connect or disconnect users from the environments through which they move. And here there's a long list of names I could give you, but David Beer and Michael Bull, Andre Lemos from Brazil, I mean, these are some important figures, Adriana D'Souza, Mimi Scheller, John Uri, these people. As mentioned in my abstract, the project also draws on Doreen Massey's notion of a global sense of place and her argument that the term place should be framed in the sense of a meeting place, I'm quoting her here, as ongoing production rather than pre-given. Place is thus a concept that highlights notions of relationality. We find inspiration in Cruikshank's notion that landscapes can act as an enduring points of reference for communicating tacit knowledge, leading to the transforming of seemingly neutral spaces into places of significance. As such, we ask how contemporary practices of sound walking, soundscape recording, sound mapping, and mobile audio composition both construct and react to the identities of places. What are the dynamics of such engagements? The concept of place is fundamental to soundscape studies and mobility studies and studies of popular electronic and sample-based music. And especially around concepts of place and space and hip-hop, I would point to Charity Marsh's work and then Murray Forman's important work as well. So I'm moving towards the conclusion here. David Beer in 2010, following a duo named Dodge and Kitchen, described mobile media devices with the awkward term logjects. So these are smart objects that create and distribute logs of their use and user profiles. This marks an important and often overlooked distinction from the Walkman that we often wiggishly cite as the precursor par excellence for mobile music devices that we take for granted today, because logjects have this ubiquitous surveillance potential that is built into them and which we're almost forced to accept. Locative media art projects, in a word, seek to intervene into such dynamics at multiple levels. However, sometimes we think we've got things all figured out only to realize our own prejudices and assumptions as a project unfolds. And this is where I would like to turn to these assumptions, histories, or to the general assumptions, histories, and agendas that are embedded into sound mapping as a practice, including my own rapidly shifting thoughts, thanks to my experience with the workshops I've been leading over the past year and including my recent trip to Buenos Aires. Beyond explicitly connecting field recording practices with mobile phones, we have come to recognize the centrality of interrogating the notion of what it means to create a sound map. What is one claiming to represent? This notion became of particular significance to my Concordia colleague, Andrew McCartney, when she was invited to engage in sound mapping outings while herself traveling internationally to Buenos Aires in the fall of 2011. Her reactions bring into strong relief one of the potential outcomes of research creation as a scholarly practice, namely, the encounter with a range of unique ethical considerations that arise in acts of creating media works. So the following correspondence took place between Andrew and I while she was in Buenos Aires in 2011. Andrew said, I think that maps are very much connected with an explorer navigator narrative. Doing a sound walk is one thing, especially if it involves local people. Making a map is more prescriptive, and I think that process should be handled with a great deal of care. Through technology and access to travel funds, first world experts can put their imprint through mapping onto soundscapes they know very little about. And I think this is a very different process from doing a sound walk, which is based on subjective experience and doesn't claim anything more than that. A map is a representation, like a score, and to make a representation based on a few days' knowledge and then present it to people who live here, it just doesn't feel right to me. Also, I don't think that imperialism stops because of autoethnography. It becomes more visible, yes. We were talking about how I was saying, well, if you situate your own position as a researcher from away when you're presenting the sound map, maybe it's ethically okay. She says, well, the imperialism doesn't stop there. It becomes more visible, yes, but it is still clear that some people have more than others and can move more easily, have more access to the fora of representation. The strength of Andrew's point around the vestiges or resonances of colonialist practices that are embedded into locative media devices and projects remains central to my thinking these days, especially since my own recent experience in Buenos Aires echoed many of Andrew's thoughts. especially in terms of access to technology, internet bandwidth, and the geographic, racial, and class divisions that meant, in the case of Buenos Aires, that our workshop participants, there were six of them, none of whom had iOS devices, and I was told that they're exceedingly expensive there. They're only for the most elite of, folks with means. So we brought down these iPad minis, right? Like we had eight of them, which we gave to the workshop participants to go out and help us create the map. But they were all concerned with being mugged while participating in our workshop with the iPad minis that we brought, because they're so conspicuous. There was one woman in an anecdote, one of the recordings she made, there was some school children that were coming out and they said, hey, there's a tablet, let's snatch it. They were also worried for our safety as obviously white privileged outsiders walking around a city that was unfamiliar to us. They also, I believe, felt a little frustrated that once we left, they could not continue to contribute to the map. We are working in ways to enable such a continuation through finding other means for them to record and send us files, perhaps using less conspicuous technologies for recording, like the older sorts of cell phones that they were much more used to carrying around and using every day, the dumb phones. Right? And utilizing other online and slightly less specific mechanisms for collecting GPS coordinates. One enthusiastic participant also indicated that he would start working on an Android prototype of our audio mobile app, because Android phones are much more accessible down there. I'll close with talking about an article which has recently also really impacted me. Jacqueline Walduck, who is an IASPM UK member, has written a very compelling paper that addresses and contests the notion of interactive sound maps as democratic, authentic forms of public engagement. It is the first and only time I've seen sound maps critiqued in print from the point of view of class and gender, and I think it makes an extremely important contribution to what has so far been a fairly unapologetically enthusiastic discourse. It is not that Walduck dismisses the relevance and power of the sound map, she simply raises important and overlooked questions, including, and I'm quoting her here, how effective is a sound map format as an archive of the environment as a whole? Attached to this also is the essential question of access. And again, I quote her, will these maps exclude the sounding worlds of those who cannot afford smartphones? And have the makers taken into account the recording culture and norms that are produced and reiterated by these maps? Walduck goes on to argue, and I would emphatically agree, that most online sound maps are embedded in an acoustic ecology framework, including audiomobile currently, but we're working against that, and privilege the important yet slanted contributions in history of soundscape studies. I think the way we have oriented the Sonic Zoom project has been guilty of a similar error, and I look forward to rectifying this moving forward. We, along with so many others, were 4A'd with our recent Shirk Insight application this year, and in thinking about how to put together the next kick at the can, these thoughts are front and center in my mind. In closing, I would like to share a website that I found yesterday while preparing this paper, pretty much by accident. I don't remember the search string I entered into Google, but such is the magic of the internet. This page from the Texas Parks and Wildlife website came unexpectedly as a strong, endearing, and slightly hilarious reminder that layers of expensive and politically loaded technology are not at all necessary elements for sound mapping initiatives. Hopefully we'll be able to read everything here. So this is their instruction on how to make a sound map. What do you need? Paper, clipboard, and something to write with. Find a comfortable spot to sit outdoors, mark an X in the center of the paper. This shows you on the map. Close your eyes and listen for at least 1 minute. Listen for sounds from animals, birds, people, and activities. Keep listening, but now draw pictures or symbols on the map representing all the sounds you hear and where they're coming from. The top of your page, write down the date, time, and where you were. What did you discover, etc. And so, I'll close with that. Thank you very much. Yeah. I'll just bring up this page that I promised where, again, thanks to Jacqueline Walduck for having pointed out so magnificently all these different sound mapping projects that were out there. I've added some extras. Here's our website and other types of things. And, you know, I can send this slide to people if you like to have access to that stuff.
Thank you so much. Are there questions?
I'm assuming there are reasons for using iOS.
Well, we started about 2 years ago, and the Android platform was still somewhat emergent at that point, and the iOS platform presented itself as an easy way to get in and get started and make something working very quickly. We had a prototype after the summer of 2011 that was pretty much ready to go. So that was a part of how, you know, Apple has made things quite easy for programmers to quickly grab modules of different types of digital code and put them together into a functioning format. So that was the initial choice, I guess. It was also based on the fact that most of us work with Macintosh products in terms of our daily research creation practices. The other thing that has come out in discussions with colleagues is that the Android platform, for all its sort of accessibility improvements, there's a different installation of Android that each of the major cell phone providers has integrated into their system. So Samsung and LG and whatever, they're all using slightly different versions of Android. So to code an app for Android actually is a little bit, well, quite a bit more complicated in terms of the cross-platform, you know, usability. And so this is something we're going to have to work on.
Observations about this, sort of that sweeping comment of the New York Subtracking website, that could have almost directly translated from waking from the radio in 1920 under process, but of course, in shell phones, which are security, of course, it's always regulated. But
right.
I was so struck by your reflections on, you know, sort of colonializing gaming practices and these things that they play out. And I guess one of the things that I always sort of love about the sort of sidewalk approach is that you can be. The ways that one is supposed to be silent and listen and shut up and not recommend and attend to others. And how in some ways the self-acting sort of, first of all, it makes me think a lot about the sort of all of those initiatives to give voice to the humans of color youth that are out there about giving kids video cameras and expensive technologies. It seems like we're hitting against some of the same sort of issues about bringing documentary kind of things. And I think you're highlighting ideas about surveillance and the distinct boundaries there at work. But I'm so struck by the distinctions between what happens when we set out to start documenting our experience and what happens when we are something actually attend and you know, recognizing also the sort of idealism and sometimes problematic idealism that underlies those versions to an extent. And I just can you reflect a little bit more about like
I can speak about that, you know, with a couple of interesting anecdotes. So we've done this workshop now 4 times in different places, twice in Montreal and once in Lancaster, UK, and then most recently in Buenos Aires. And the first 3 times we started with about an hour of talking about soundscape studies and why audio field recording is important and embedding it in the history of the World Soundscape Project and how we're critical of it, da 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 da. And then when people went out to make recordings, they came back with a bunch of recordings with where they didn't talk and they were very careful not to be too loud when they were walking and they were recording the sounds of birds and other things in the environment. And then we went to Buenos Aires, and Sam Tulin and Kim and I, we all went together. And Sam and I, who were running the workshop, we made a very deliberate decision not to overdetermine how people would use the app. And we did a brief explanation of how it worked, and we sent them out to make recordings. And then they came back, and everybody just surprised and shocked us and educated us around how other different types of uses that could come out, and especially Felipe. I mean, that was really striking, the way he was just making these really short recordings and using the photograph principally as a way to sort of document different parts of his everyday life. And then we started to learn ourselves, right? And I also recognized in that moment, after listening to Felipe's and some of the other contributions, that when I was using the app, and it was happening to me even here in Hamilton, I remain very silent. I sort of silence myself. I don't make audio commentary. And I get excited when I'm walking on gravel because I feel like I can put my own sort of agency in there a little bit with the sound of movement. But that's as far as I'm willing to go. And I think I'm impeded by my own kind of history of having worked with Andrew and worked within the soundscape studies kind of paradigm to the point where now I'm limiting my own use of these potential objects or devices. Recently also we've been approached by Stephen High in the Oral History Center at Concordia. And he's very excited about the app as a way to do walking interviews, right? Which is something I never even occurred to me. So that you could be, you know, walking with someone and doing ethnographic research and walking through a neighborhood, keeping a trace of that path, that moment, but then also using it precisely to feature, you know, an ethnographic or an oral account of somebody's life experience, which is an extraordinary notion. So all of these things are really, really shifting. And I'm sure next time when we get the grant, it's because we're going to be integrating these greater levels of reflexivity. Okay, thank you.
Really, actually, what I think one of the things that we're struggling with and I'm struggling with in the other work that I do is around sustainability. So what, mm-hmm. you know, what do we do when we're going into all various communities, going and working with youth, or going into different parts of the world, et cetera, and you introduce this great platform in yourself, but I mean, and now you take it, hey, this is really cool, and then you run away and volunteer.
I know,
and
yeah.
I mean, there are certain things that I try to do, like, accidentally forget here in communities and things like this that you try and do basically in terms of all those other things in those kind of deviant ways. Right? But I mean, I think there needs to be something else. There has to be something better than that. And so these one-off workshops, which are just so problematic in so many ways, I'm wondering how, you know, maybe you can have conversations about this.
Yeah. It's really tough. We were really tempted to leave an iPad mini behind. We didn't, because our insurance policy is anything under $500 is just a loss, right, for the project. So we were like, eh. And, but I mean, I guess a short answer to the question would be simply that as a researcher, I'm recognizing that, you know, we can kind of gallivant around the world and go to different places and, you know, build our kind of our tourism dossiers, right? Or we can go back to places repeatedly. And obviously, you're an inspiration on this level. And I think it's important that you know, we go back to Buenos Aires, we go back to these places, Lancaster. We re-engage with the people who we were engaging with before, and then also try to build the capacity for this ongoing dialogue and learning process and exchange to continue. Maybe it's a kind of a piecemeal answer, but it's, for now, it's the best that I'm thinking is that I don't need to keep traveling around the world. You know, I can go back to places and revisit them and revisit the people and get them more engaged and ideally leave some stuff behind. There was another interesting reflection that came out of one of the participants who is a scholar and does have a certain mobility, and she was actually on her way to the UK, and she was wanting to integrate this work into her reflections on how difficult it is for North and South to kind of do these sorts of exchanges precisely because of the lack of kind of understanding of the differences around access to technology and internet bandwidth and these kinds of things.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.